It's time now for our weekly look inside Congress with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. The U.S. military is back in action in Iraq, but how are the country's legislators responding?
And there were a few surprises in yesterday's primaries, but coming up next Tuesday, there's a primary in Alaska that'll play a role in deciding which party controls the Senate next year.
And while the Senate may be in play, a USA Today report out earlier this week lays out plenty of reasons that the House is pretty securely in Republican hands this fall. USA Today politics editor Paul Singer joins us every week at this time. Paul, welcome back.
Thanks a lot, Rob. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Well, Congress seems to be pretty solidly in support of the airstrikes, at least the airstrikes, against ISIS in Iraq. Is it fair to say that Congress is actually more or less in agreement on something?
Maybe a little bit. It's what's interesting about the statements out of Congress is that they agree that the airstrikes are the right thing to do, and that's all they agree on, because there's sort of several schools of thought. There is the Republican camp that will tell you the airstrikes were the right thing to do, but it shouldn't have come to this if Obama had not withdrawn troops from Iraq. There's another camp that says the airstrikes are the right thing to do, but we need to do much more. We need to send more ground troops and really take back over the country. There's another group of Republicans that would tell you that the airstrikes are the right thing to do for humanitarian purposes, but we cannot under any circumstances get more American troops involved in Iraq. And then, of course, there's Democrats who say basically the same thing, that airstrikes were the right thing to do, but no open-ended military commitment is possible. We can't be involved in restarting the Iraq war. So, yes, I think there is broad agreement that this was a humanitarian crisis, that the United States needed to respond, and a military response was appropriate. Once you get past that, the disagreements break out into the open.
Do you expect to see any sort of cohesive positions developing anytime soon among Democrats and Republicans?
No. What's interesting about that is that, first of all, Congress, of course, out of session, so they don't have much to do on this topic for a while. And the second thing is it's not clear that Congress has any real authority to do anything anyhow. It's fairly clear that the administration has an authorization for military force in Iraq that continues to permit them to use military force without the approval of Congress, particularly if there's no ground force, ground troops involved. At the moment, the administration says they don't need any more money, so they don't need Congress to approve that either. So there's nothing really forcing Congress to take action or to come to a consensus position. And honestly, I think to some degree Congress would prefer to stay out of this. I don't think members of Congress have a good answer either. And so they're better off letting Obama struggle with this problem rather than inserting themselves into the middle of it.
So since they won't be directly involved out of session, maybe they don't need to do anything. Is this going to give at least some members of Congress some latitude for electioneering around this issue?
Well, maybe, but again, it's hard to decide how this cuts, right? If you are a conservative Republican, you're running in a campaign, you can say, "See, Obama screwed up in Iraq." However, if it looks like we are running a successful humanitarian operation, rescuing tens of thousands of Yazidis from a isolated mountaintop where they face sheer starvation, maybe Obama looks good at that moment. It's hard to figure out exactly what the political angle is here. I think, the strongest political angle, honestly, is possibly the least popular one, which is there's a small group of liberals, who are arguing, no more war, get out of Iraq, no more bombing, let's walk away from it. Possibly also a small group of kind of isolationists on the conservative side as well. Maybe they argue this is a good campaign piece for them because they can say, we're the ones who really are for peace. But I'm not sure that's going to move a whole lot of races.
And meanwhile, as you said, you've got President Obama sort of acting alone on the world stage.
Yeah.
If, say, things go spectacularly well, just, for the sake of argument.
What are the odds of that?
is there any chance he could turn it into political capital and use it to swing some Democrats in the November elections?
Well, you know, I think any time there is a U.S. engagement in the world and the president is leading on the world stage, to the degree it works out well for the Americans, American foreign policy, that, of course, makes the president and his party look good. And people will want to stand next to the president, or at least next to the president's policies, and say, this is what we did right. In this case, however, I have to say, without being sarcastic at all, it is hard to understand what exactly the good outcome would be that would make people want to stand there and say, we achieved something great in Iraq. It's very murky. Even a victory at this point, it's not clear what a victory is. I mean, the whole campaign is about freeing these people who are in jeopardy and you know, to some degree degrading the ability of ISIS to move across the nation. But, you know, that's a pretty narrow goal, and I'm not sure it's one you put on a campaign platform.
Well, moving on to primary elections, just had ours in Wisconsin. You told us last week, Paul, not a lot you're watching here in terms of control over Congress or the Senate, and, well, obviously not the Senate, no election here. But looking ahead, what races are you keeping an eye on in the next week or so?
Well, I do want to mention, though, I was eavesdropping on your conversation with Mordechai Lee, and that was really interesting when he talks about the fact that like 6 or 7% are the undecideds in the middle. When you think about that, and it matters for this conversation about who controls the Senate, you know, in a lot of these races we are talking about, the swing races, we're talking about, you know, 45 to 45, Republican to Democrat. They both have, you know, no one has a major lead. They're neck and neck. It means that in the middle there are these 5 or 6 or 7% of people who are, in theory, or in some ways, the least politically active and the least politically engaged. They don't really have strong opinions about politics. They're the ones that are going to make the decisions. It's really interesting when you think about it that way. The one I'm watching now is Alaska. We actually got a reporter going up there in a couple of days. There is an Alaska Senate race. Senator Mark Begich is a Democrat up for re-election. Alaska is a tough place for Democrats, always has been. And there was a Republican primary yesterday. Republican primary next Tuesday. And there is, again, this divide. There are a couple of candidates in the mix for Republicans, one a Tea Party candidate who is pretty divisive, one a sort of more establishment Republican who's being attacked by the Tea Party guys for being not from Alaska or not a, you know, real Alaskan. The Republicans are in danger of eating their own young here, having a brutal primary, and leaving Begich with a clearer path to re-election. That race could be one that really determines the tilt of the Senate in November.
So the Senate is in play, but USA Today published a report earlier this week saying that the House is pretty much a done deal in terms of going to the Republicans.
That's right.
How come?
Part of it is redistricting. At this point, members of the House have basically chosen their voters instead of the other way around. So there's very few districts that have any kind of swing in them. They are built to be safe Democratic and safe Republican districts. And then you've got, you know, 90-some-odd percent of the Congress are incumbents running in safe districts. There's about 24 House seats that are really competitive, and in those cases, most of them are Democratic-held seats. There's only a handful of Republican-held seats that the Democrats really have a chance to win. So we say there is no way they can get the 17-seat swing they need to take over the House of Representatives.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Paul, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks. Have a great week, guys.
You too. That's Paul Singer. He's politics and Congress editor at USA Today. He joins us each week at this time to bring us up to date on the latest from Congress and in election season, what's going on in the primaries and then the runoffs.